The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
You don't produce a Kieran Kilkenny or an Oisín Mullen. You don't produce them overnight. They take time, takes a lot of work, massive loss for his club, but he's meant for professional sport.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
OTBAM with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. It is time for the performance rankings. Oh, I'll tell you what's going up first. Yeah, good. Well done. We're going to do our performance rankings right now. We have sports pages at 10 past 8. Andy Mitten's going to join us at 8:30. A slightly more positive interview this time with Andy than some of the ones we've been doing recently. Alan Quinlan's going to join us at 8:50. A bizarre weekend of rugby. Brilliant if you're Ulster. Very worrying if you're Munster. And what the hell kind of performance the Leinster give. But if you're Connacht, you're like, hang on a second, we have this code cracked. The FA Cup final, we're going to talk about St Patrick's Athletic victory on penalties against Bohemians at 10 past 9. Ireland versus Georgia is live tomorrow night on Off the Ball. Nathan's going to be doing commentary on that one, so we'll talk to him about that. And Sunday papers at 9:30. Time for the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Boom. Right. Here are the performance rankings this week. In the red, we have Ronaldo on Everton. We have the Ultimate Rugby Championship. I was struggling with the name of that one. In orange, it's the McGraths and Co. In green, the Hurlers and the Footballers and the Camogues. And St Patrick's Athletic also in green. So we're going to start with Cristiano in red.
Dropped. You can't drop Cristiano Ronaldo, but Michael Carrick, the bravest manager of his generation, did just that. Manchester United can't even do their little half press that they tried to do yesterday with Cristiano Ronaldo in the side. Left him out.
You the commentary in this game, right? So you saw the whole thing.
I saw the whole thing.
Did you expect Ronaldo to be dropped? Because we've got a new show kicking off the weekend and Buig was sitting in your seat and I was like, oh, maybe Carrick drops Ronaldo. He said, Carrick's not going to drop Ronaldo. How could he possibly do that? And he did.
Lo and behold, he did. Yeah, it was a big decision considering...
I thought he was going to because it's a real, I'm my own man, I'm a human being. I'm not just a patsy for the club.
And it makes sense against Chelsea, of all teams, where
you give yourself a chance of victory. And also, you know the next manager's going to do it anyway. So you may as well get in. Look, I could be a very important part of your crew here. I might be the next manager in waiting here. Ranić comes in.
Jobs for the boys, Jer.
Those 2 or 3 years.
Do we know if Michael Carrick's a good coach? We have no idea. But everything suggests he's not. Everything he's been part of suggests he's not a very good coach.
It's hard though when your star is overshone by Jose Mourinho and then Solskjaer, who's like, how does this job work? I'm not sure. Let's have the crack.
Listen, they had a one-all draw against Chelsea where they were absolutely and utterly dominated by Chelsea for the entirety of the game. David De Gea, if he doesn't make that save from Callum Hudson-Odoi early on, this could easily end up in another 4-5-0. Chelsea had it all except in that final third where nothing really clicked. There's no Timo Werner. Got to remember, Chelsea were missing pretty much half of what I would say. If they have a first-choice 11, half of them aren't there. Kante's out injured. Kovacic isn't there. Mason Mount is on the bench. Havertz is on the bench. Romelu Lukaku's on the bench. Christian Pulisic's on the bench.
Why did he start all those players on the bench? Because they're not quite...
A variety of different reasons. Injuries and all sorts of things going on. Which meant that United start with 3 holding midfielders, so sometimes we've 1, sometimes we've 2, and this time we end up with 3. And actually, all 3 of them, I thought, did quite well. But it was a Chelsea midfield of Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Jorginho, which is a very different beast from a Chelsea midfield of Jorginho, Kante, and Mason Mount.
Yeah.
So I think it worked out in his favour. Like, did they press? Jeez, this wasn't a Chelsea or Liverpool press. It was glaringly obvious in the first half that United weren't quite sure what to do. Bruno Fernandes is half pushing up. More often than not, they ended up with this low block where they're sitting way back and happy to let Chelsea play in front of them. And this, maybe it's a sign of where Manchester United are, despite all their incredible attacking talent, that this is what they need to do now against the very best teams, is be defensive. But they weren't I didn't think they were a counter-attacking team by any stretch of the imagination. Yesterday, I guess their goal, I guess, on a sort of counter-attack by a horrible error by Jorginho, where I think Thomas Tuchel says
he lost it in the
floodlights.
Right?
Floodlights.
Wow, was that much of a hoof?
It was
agricultural.
Whew, right up there from Bruno Fernandes. It's a big decision by Michael Carrick. There's no question. Like, he says he spoke to Cristiano Ronaldo.
We had a good chat.
Was completely accepting. And maybe he was proven right, because I thought actually United were a lesser team in the last half an hour when Ronaldo came on. Though you still felt in those last few minutes when it got really frantic that he's just going to score here, isn't he? He's just going to score. And he stormed straight off down the tunnel. I'm not sure, was it because he was having a row with the referee, or was it that his teammates never got the ball in the box in those last couple of minutes? It came out on the left, it came out on the right.
He does storm off anyway, though. That's his thing. That is his shtick, apart from when he's given his...
Well, he was storming off then as well, I think.
She got to him. Mm. That was the issue. Just briefly before we talk more about Ronaldo, what was Marcus Rashford doing when the goal was scored? He's offside the whole way through, and if Sancho passes it to him, maybe he's distracting the keeper. But surely the keeper knows he's offside too. So the keeper's looking at him going, I'm going to take the risk that this guy's offside and just focus on you.
It does work though, because Sancho gives the eyes enough times where you... Mendy,
he's given the eyes so long, and he's like, what are you doing? You're offside.
Marcus Rashford's always offside. But this was just a very strange situation where there was once or twice when, you know, there's the 10 seconds that Jadon Sancho's inside the Chelsea half where maybe the ball is slightly ahead of him. But just stay back. And also, it's not the best angle he's giving.
No.
If Sancho, well, you're going to play in an offside position, but even if the ball's ahead, he's probably going to end up playing it slightly behind you.
Yeah.
And you make a mess of the whole thing. And this is a viral moment for Manchester United at a time when they could really avoid having any of those.
So, Ronaldo getting dropped. This is the end for Ronaldo?
It's clearly not the end, but
interim
maybe.
Interim coach coming in. But
maybe it is the end in games like this for Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, maybe he's your guy for playing, you know, Aston Villa or West Ham, or, well, maybe not even West Ham at this stage. But those teams outside the top three or four, those teams who can press high, like Rangnick will want Manchester United to do, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't play or doesn't start in those games. Does he accept that? Maybe right now he says, of course, yes, I'll do whatever's best for the club.
But it's the end of him.
Sitting on the bench in Manchester over Christmas.
Next season he is gone. This is the end. It's a 1 year thing for Cristiano Ronaldo. The clock started ticking and it accelerated with the decision at the weekend and the fact that they got a better result against Chelsea than they have done against City or Liverpool. Like, it's hard, regardless of the quality of the performance, right? The clock is ticking on Ronaldo and he will not be a Manchester United player next September.
Well, who's the manager going to be next September? Like, is this appointment of Ralf Rangnick a seismic change in how the club is run? That we are bringing in the visionary of German football who's going to have an influence on everything we do football-wise for the next 3 or 4 years. So he will be the one who decides the manager.
If it's not, what's the point of it?
But this is Manchester United, so it's the one club where you would look and think there's a possibility that there may be no point to it.
You have to assume that what's going to happen.
Mm.
That Rangnick has been brought in to inject his DNA and the everything that we've read about him and heard about him over the last week, that or for the last 4 days, that he is going to do that to Manchester United, and that there's not really room for Ronaldo in that. They might keep him as like a... They might do a deal with him to keep him up until after the World Cup and let him go in the January transfer window after the World Cup, if they qualify, which isn't a guarantee at the moment because they're in the same group as Italy. So I don't know. This could be the end of Ronaldo at Manchester United.
Ronaldo's got 10 goals. 10 goals already this season.
I know, but it's not to say that, like...
Greenwood wouldn't have 10 goals if Mason Greenwood was
playing. Or they signed Vlahovic or somebody. You know, like... Would you be terribly surprised to see them sign a shit-kicking 22-year-old, 21-year-old who likes to run from the front and is good on the ball? And like, that's what I would expect them to do.
Well, everything that Rangnick seems to be about is anti what Manchester United have been about. So the next few months are going to be the most interesting. And maybe till the end of the season, because I don't know who you can sign in January. Can you sign enough good young players to be able to fully implement his system? But United have been a sort of form of Galacticos. He wants young, energetic, enthusiastic players. United have been anything but that.
Yeah.
But we haven't even seen him there yet. So this thing of, oh, he had an influence yesterday, and Gary Neville was suggesting that he almost picked the team and it was his decision. And listen, maybe Carrick knows what's coming down the track and that he wants to get that process started. Again, like, this was not a high-pressing gegenpress from Manchester United.
You have to assume that Carrick and Rangnick have had a conversation, right? And maybe Rangnick floated the notion of, let's see what the team looks like without Ronaldo. And that's a test. And Carrick passed the test, did what he was told.
You're my guy.
Well, you know, like, Rangnick's not going to get 14 coaches in who are all his guys again between now and the end of the season? Because he's not staying in that role. Or well, is he? Does he secretly covet that role?
But this is, again, like, we're very early in the season. We're only a third of the way through the season. If, which is not beyond the realms of possibility at all, Ralph Rangnick comes in, Manchester United finish inside the top four and win the Champions League. What are you doing then? Oh, thanks. It's the Jupp Heynckes situation at Bayern Munich, and we've got Mauricio Pochettino lined up. So you're an old guy. You don't even want to be coaching on the pitch.
Well,
every day.
Well, I mean, maybe what he does at that point is he escapes into the background and goes, "I'll take. You're going to double my agreed previous salary. I'm now going to 5 million a year or whatever it is to be your director of football, and I get to pick the manager for the next decade because I'm now the genius here. So you become unsackable, and you get a job for life. You basically become the new Ferguson, except you know you're more involved at that stage. And thanks very much.
It's so interesting to see how this develops, because Rangnick clearly has an enormous reputation, and United seemed to were interested before, Chelsea were interested, but his track record is in developing players. His track record is bringing players up several levels. He hasn't gone into a dressing room like Manchester United's before and had to make an impact. Maybe he is such a good coach, and everything suggests he is, that isn't going to be an issue. And actually, maybe that Manchester United dressing room is perfect for him when you take away Cristiano Ronaldo. That there's still loads more to come from Mason Greenwood. There has to be more to come from Marcus Rashford, who's just massively stagnated. Jadon Sancho's still primed to be educated. There's lots of players in there, actually, good young players that you can make better.
Well, those three alone, you could press with them if they were taught how to do it. And it seems like everybody says Tuchel turned Chelsea around in one training session. Remember that boring nil-all draw, and it was like, "Oh, this is really boring. The clock is ticking," was the headline. Clock stopped ticking. Henry Winter's clock seems to have stopped on Thomas Tuchel's time at Chelsea for the moment anyway. I suspect that Chelsea's playing squad was actually better and deeper than this one, and it was more balanced than the current squad at Manchester United.
It was, but I think that's the brilliance of a good coach, in that look at the left-hand side is the most obvious example. Like Marcus Alonso, every summer seems to be on his way out of Chelsea. Comes in.
He's a good player, though.
He is a good player, but I think nearly all those Manchester United players are good players. Like, look at Luke Shaw's level from last season and maybe add something to that compared to what he's been this year.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they do have a problem probably at the back where if you want to press... The midfielders aren't as good, and they have a problem at the back if you want to press high and Harry Maguire's
just
their ass. Maybe you have a bit of an issue there. But I think...
Does Eric Bailly have pace?
Like, he seems to have quite a bit of pace. He certainly has a turn, I think, compared to...
Well, you know, is it possible that...
Harry Maguire gets dropped.
He comes in and goes, "Okay, Bailly and Lindelof, you're my two, right? Lindelof's going to be the smart guy. Bailly's going to be the fast guy. And here's the combination of them." And Lindelof sets the agenda for everybody. Because, Lindelof's a decent footballer.
Yeah.
Is he any worse than Harry Maguire? I don't think he is.
But maybe not as good with the ball at his feet as Harry Maguire.
Is he not?
But again, I just think the brilliance of Tuchel is that a good coach doesn't care about any of this. He just picks whatever team and actually has a way of managing it that nobody at Chelsea has thrown their toys out of the pram. Nobody. And he constantly rotates the
team.
Well,
we certainly haven't heard about them, and they've won the Champions League. So if you do, exactly. No one's listening. That's the bit where... And the trouble at Man United is that Ronaldo will throw his toys out of the pram pretty quickly and we'll start hearing about it. Or a deal will be done.
A backdoor deal will be done to get him
to go somewhere else.
This guy, what's he ever won? This coach, what's he ever won? He's leaving Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench.
And maybe... Do they let him go mid-season?
Nah. Ronaldo's not going in January. There's a lot of goals to be scored.
You can go to Barcelona.
There's a lot of handy goals to be scored.
You can go to Barcelona. There is a lot of handy goals to be scored.
It's going to be the Divock Origi of Manchester United.
There might not be a lot of football to be played. That's your Twitter handle for the day. The new Divock Origi. 7:47, time for us to move on. Rafa Benitez is in the red this morning.
Yeah, going to be a strange...
Rafa Benitez below Steven Gerrard in the table at the moment.
It's been a disastrous run for Everton. No wins in 7, 1 win in 9. Remember, they started the season unbeaten in 4, and everyone was obviously putting it down to the Rafa effect.
Champions League.
His ability
stadium.
To work with the likes of Damari Gray and Andras Townsend, who they spent absolutely no money on. Kumain scoring goals, making an impact. But it's fallen apart. I think a large reason, like several clubs, is that the amount of injuries that are happening in the Premier League is just insane. Every game you watch, there seems to be 4 or 5 players missing from every team through injury. And Everton, right down the spine, have lost their key players. Yerry Mina, Doucouré and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Doucouré was one of the best players in the Premier League for the first month of the season, gets injured. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, we've seen how he's developed over the last couple of years, and also seems to be able to bring the best out of Richarlison alongside him. And they're a bit of a mess at the back without Yerry Mina.
You're just, we want to put this on the record, you're a massive Richarlison fan to the point where you tipped him up to
I still think when he's at his best, I would have had Richarlison as the best player outside the top six for a long time. And I think the fact that he's Brazilian sort of is held against him when we look at work rate. Like, that's not there anymore. You look at what Rafinha does at Leeds and what Richarlison does well. Like, he works his ass off when he's in the mood, when the team is going well. Maybe he's not the character who, in a time like this...
We've heard that Man United are in for Richarlison, and that that's going to be one of those things that just gets done over the next...
Well, I think it'd be a great signing for Manchester United, because I remember when he came over first and you're watching him in front of Seamus Coleman, you're thinking, this won't be a particularly happy partnership. But actually, it turned out that to Theo Walcott...
Where would Richarlison play in the Man United?
What system is he going to play? Surely he's not going to play... He's not going to play to three midfielders in every game for Manchester United. So,
well, he might until he replaces the three of them. Do you know?
And then just have two attackers, which means you're leaving four of them on the bench.
Well, it's 4-3-3, right?
But Fernandez is one of them as well. So you're only playing two more alongside Fernandez.
Is Fernandez on his way out?
Again, if you think back to Fernandez at Sporting Lisbon, and he was sort of a one-man show, and he seemed to be able to cover every blade of grass then.
So you think you can use him in that?
I think you can. Okay. I think you can. You can turn Bruno Fernandes around from what he's been over the last 6 months, which is somebody who throws his arms in the air an awful lot and spends a lot of time giving out about things. But I think I do think Richarlison has that potential to play for Manchester United or any of the teams, and to be part of a team that presses high. So
it's either going to be Christmas or the New Year or the summer transfer window.
The problem for Rafa Benitez is the style of football. That when things are going well, you just about get away with it. In modern football, Everton are looking around at all the other teams. They're looking at Liverpool. They're watching the excitement and they're thinking, like, we've got a busted flush. We've got a guy who is not going to entertain us in any way, who, because we're not getting results, isn't going to bring us silverware. So basically, what's the point?
Yeah.
And that's the problem for any of these, like, negative managers, which is, you know, he makes say he's a pragmatic manager. But, like, this is Everton. Like, Jesus. Every single season, the same story, these sort of runs. Seamus Coleman out doing his post-match interviews. Got to look at ourselves. Can't look at the manager. They've gone for every different type of manager.
They should look at the manager.
Same old thing.
Well, they haven't. Have they got a young, progressive, good manager who wants to play good football? I forget now, have they?
Well, they had Roberto Martinez, who actually did quite well.
Yeah, well, I mean, who they complained about at the time, he wasn't getting up to the level Liverpool were at. But I think they would take him back now. They would take that run of success back.
Yeah.
That style of playback. Has there been anybody else since? I'm trying to think.
Big Sam? No. Marco Silva? No.
I don't even remember. Was Marco Silva there long enough to...
He wasn't very good, Marco Silva. Had a good agent, though, clearly. A very good agent. But, they've a lot of injuries in key positions, and I think if they had kept all them, it'd be a different scenario. But then you could say the same thing last season. I remember watching them on the first day of the season. They beat Spurs, and you were looking at their midfield at the time again, where they had Alan and Doucouré and Gomez and James Rodriguez was playing. I think, geez, this Everton team, James Rodriguez and Richarlison either side of Calvert-Lewin, like, could finish inside the top four. And then Alan gets injured and it just all falls apart.
Yeah. So how bad is this going to get? Is he going to get
fired?
It's
going to be a bizarre scenario on Wednesday night, isn't it, for the Merseyside derby, where he's booed onto the pitch by his own team supporters, but the away team supporters are all going wild for him.
So Liverpool fans are delighted by what's happening.
Well, like, it's perfect scenario. He's always going to be beloved at Anfield, for
especially now
winning the Champions League,
and then taking Everton down.
He goes and destroys Everton. Like, couldn't be a better scenario. They've got Liverpool and Arsenal over the next week. Like, some of the results.
They've
seen five at home to Watford. The way Liverpool are playing at the moment, at this, like, the way these things are written in the Stars, they'll beat Liverpool 1-0 again and, you know, derail Liverpool's title hopes. Or Liverpool just keep going the way they've been going, and think back a couple of years ago, they scored five in the Merseyside derby around this time of the year, that they do that again, and then you're
very dangerous territory.
I remember Everton have a load of money, so yeah, they can afford to make these changes.
They have a lot of money. They didn't use the load of money in the summer.
No, they brought in Gray, Townsend and Solomon Rondon, who follows Rafa wherever he goes and doesn't score too many goals. No, presumably they're looking at the previous summers where they spent an insane amount of money and not much of it worked out on the likes of Alex Iwobi, Gylfi Sigurdsson and players like that who've not really done much for the club since they came in.
So Palace have 16 points, Brentford have 16 points, Villa have 16 points, Everton have 15 points. And then, okay, so Burnley are on 9. There's 6 clear of the relegation zone at the moment. Obviously between them is Southampton, Watford.
And will be relegated.
Somebody's getting sucked back into that relegation.
It won't be Everton. No, they'll have enough. Now, if somehow none of these players return and Calvert-Lewin seems to have one of these injuries that it's a little bit longer, Now, I know they're hoping to have him maybe back in the squad for Wednesday. I think if Calvert-Lewin comes back, he could transform Everton.
Because he will score goals.
And as I say, I think, geez, he's so bloody good in the air. Like, he is one of the best in the league in the air, if not the best. And not even that, like, you watch the leap on him. You talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and the various videos and the science behind how high he can jump. Calvert-Lewin, I'd say, can nearly do the same. You watch him, the way he chests the ball down above somebody's head, holds it up, brings Richarlison into it. Richarlison shows enough to finally fulfil that potential.
We'll see. Right, so is Rafa getting sacked?
Yeah, if they concede 5 or more against Liverpool, he's getting sacked.
Okay, all right, there you go. That's another hostage fortune this morning. In the orange, it's the United Rugby Championship. It was supposed to be a big weekend. We were supposed to get the really first opportunity to see how the Irish teams were going to fare against the South African teams. Unfortunately, the new variant intervened. The golf tournaments were kind of stopped in the middle of the tournament. Some people finished them out. Some people came home. It didn't seem like a... Some people... There's stories of how, like, there's actually a European Tour charter. It sounds like it might still be in the air from the reports. It was like, was refused permission to land in...
Well, it was... how do these states work? I'm not quite sure, but the charter was put on by DP World, which is a subsidiary of Dubai. They were flying to Dubai, and Dubai said, nah, you're not landing here.
All right,
now, they hadn't actually taken off, so they were, it wasn't okay, these scenarios where you're lads. How much... How much fuel have we got left? Somebody please take us in. Yeah, listen, obviously this all blew up on Thursday and Friday pretty quickly and scared the bejesus out of all of us and might still be scaring the bejesus out of an awful lot of people, particularly if you're stuck in South Africa. The golfers, the Irish golfers all withdrew straight away. So did a load of the English golfers. Got the hell out of Dodge. Tournaments ends up being cancelled after 36 holes anyways. One of the players, I think it was Ashley Chester, is getting married, but decided not to withdraw for the tournament. Was in contention. Tournament gets called off. He finishes inside the top 3, gets an invite for the Open. So at least he is that. You know, may not get married, but there's all sorts of horror stories from players who are still stuck there, who've been trying to get out, who've been spending thousands on flights, and then are told that the flight isn't allowed to take off because the country they're going to is banned flights. It seems as though there's another charter that is going to get them somewhere. And then you have the situation with Munster, which just seems to go from bad to worse, where, again, find themselves right in the heart of it, looking to get out. Player tests positive, which means they're back in their hotel, and seems to be just a lot of confusion as to when they can come home, and it's going to have severe knock-on effects for the rugby calendar. Obviously, we know, in context, it's not that important, and games can be arranged and all of that. But in the short term, in the rugby context, there's the problem for the Champions Cup, because Munster are due to play in, what, 10, 12 days' time. Hard to see how they can do that now, regardless of what happens, considering they're going to have to quarantine when they come back. So maybe push those games back into January, February. There's also the issue for this tournament, which I know you have been one of the biggest fans of, actually. Not big enough fan to actually figure out what the name is. Give me the name.
The ultimate fighting competition? The United Rugby Championship.
But where do they go? Like, what commitments can you make for teams to go to South Africa, maybe, and we all hope this settles down.
They should
down.
Just buy the Ultimate Rugby app and rename it Ultimate Rugby Championship, shouldn't they? Like, it's a good app. It's exactly what they need.
Lots of people have it already. It's a good business model there, Ger.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
You got shares in this? This is some sort of insider trading?
I don't.
Should we edit this out?
No, let's keep going. I think it's a good idea. Right. You can have that one for nothing, lads.
I guess the only option is that if all of this settles down, and hopefully it's not as severe as everybody fears it might be, that you have to do what they were planning to do last year. You bring all the South African sides up and you base them in England.
Yeah.
You base them in Italy and you just get the games played, because even last week they were signing new television rights deals for over in the Far East. That this is a tournament that certainly, it seems, the television companies and the broadcasters are very interested in.
Well, it had It was sold as something that had the potential to be the best rugby league in the world, right? You were up against the top 14 and you were breaking up the power base or the Southern Hemisphere unions by taking the best teams and putting them up against the best teams in Ireland, Scotland and Wales and the Italian teams. And there should have been, and there's a potential for some games, but like it's not that convoluted, but it's, you know, it's a new structure of a season, and now we're not going to see how that structure actually works. Does it have knock-on impact? When were the South African team supposed to join the European Cup? Is it next season or is it the season after?
What? The South African teams are joining the Champions Cup? What?
Yeah, that was part of the...
Nah, you can't have that.
Why not? What's the point of them being in the league if they can't qualify?
They're bleeding obvious.
Well, you just rename it.
Yeah, but you're changing the entire history of the competition.
I mean, it's a brand new competition. It's about a wet week old.
So you're saying Munster haven't won a current competition ever?
Well, they have.
It's the European Cup.
Yeah, it's the European Cup.
It's not the European Cup. South African teams are in it.
The European Cup is like the mid-90s.
I don't care. It's still the same.
You're older than us.
Still the same trophy, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you'll keep the same trophy. You'll just now have the Stormers. Okay.
I'm all for bringing the South African sides and giving them a chance in the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
But what's the point of the Ultimate Fighting Championship if you can't use it to qualify for the Olympics? Like,
because they've got their own tournament.
They don't, though, anymore.
They do. They've the Ultimate Rugby Championship. That's got to be the pinnacle of what they can achieve.
And now.
You can't bring them into the European Cup.
Here, this tournament is great. But actually, we're just going to ignore you for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks of the season. And we're going to go over here. It's actually the best tournament. You can't play in it because you might win it. Or we like you. We don't like it that much.
Now, we do. I should be careful what I say here. And right now, obviously, I'm, you know, it's not the most attractive proposition. But we obviously do broadcasts and have the rights for the European Champions Cup. So the fact that there might be suddenly away games in South Africa.
You're like, woo! I always wanted to taste the Stellenbosch straight from the tree.
Yes, yeah. Can't do that one off tube, unfortunately.
Right.
This is
so,
an outrage.
Okay. Well, that was a tangent. Next is in green. It is the McGraths & Co. So this is Lachmore Castellani on a roll. Let's have a listen to one of the McGraths here. This is Brian, the goal scorer, on the pitch with Stephen Gleeson of Tip FM.
Feeling like to win the double in Tipperary, like, you know, you had to hurl all the way.
Stephen, I can't put it into words. I don't think any of us can believe what we're after doing. Like, it's unbelievable. Every week, just playing with those lads, there's no better feeling. It's some enjoyment. Oh, I can't never enjoy the club championship as much. Every week out with the boys, no better feeling, and we absolutely love it.
You had to work so hard to get there, and you kept going, and you know, every player fighting week on week, you know, everything for that moment to see, can you achieve this, what you've done?
Oh, I do it all again. Everything we've gone through the last 2 years, do it all again last year, it makes it even more special. Winning with these boys is unbelievable. And Noel said in his speech, it's his proudest moment, and I'm absolutely delighted for him. No one else deserves that more, and by God, to play with them lads there week in week, it's unbelievable, it's so enjoyable, and I absolutely love it.
So that's Brian McGrath, the goal scorer, at talking to Stephen Gleeson of Tip FM in the aftermath. So they beat Turles Sarsfield in the replay of the hurling final yesterday. They won the football the week before, and now obviously they're going to go forward to the Munster Championship in hurling and football as double champions. And Stephen Gleeson, who you saw there, tweeted yesterday, 18 cousins of the famed McGrath clan of Lochmore played in county finals last weekend. 17 won medals with drum football, drum camogie, Lochmore, that's Noel John, etc. Spare thought for Therese Short, who was the only cousin who didn't win a medal. At least her sister Michelle did.
Jez.
They appear to be in different jerseys, so they must have been playing up against each other.
Yeah, there was an article last week of the cousins going up against each other as well. Yeah, they're kind of dominant down there. And John McGrath scored a last minute goal in the football final to win that one. Scores a last minute point. And then there's this almighty scrap at the end of the game where Turles are trying to get into it. Yes, they're not a proper, not a schmozzle, just a little scrap.
Right.
Where everyone's scrapping for the ball, and out of nowhere, John McGrath emerges and the full time whistle blows.
And he saved the day.
Saved the day.
That's not bad. So that's pretty special. And yeah, I mean, it turns out players can play games.
play a lot of games
all the time.
You can
week after week after week, and they'd prefer really enjoy it.
They'd prefer to do that than training.
Mm.
What's going on? Why, you know? Oh, you can't have more than 3 games in 10 weeks. Anyway, look, congratulations, because that is an incredible story, and it's the type of stories that, again, in the olden times when people talked about a split season, oh, you're handing over the whole calendar year to all the other sports, and now it's all going to, you know, no one will ever talk energy at all. It's like everybody's talking about these, you know.
Do you know what I discovered at the weekend, Jared? This, I think, did it go under the radar? I don't know if it was mentioned on OTBAM, maybe because you didn't want it brought up. I didn't realise Vincent's were relegated.
Oh, yeah, we talked about it ages ago. Did you? Yeah.
I only discovered this when wallowing in the Jude's misery of losing another county final. The confusion around the Dublin Championship is very, very real for me. That, like, so they're down in intermediate. No. They're in senior two.
Yeah, which I think is...
Which means they can't win senior one.
No, they can't win senior one. What's
going on, Jer?
In other counties, it would be effectively intermediate, right? But it's not intermediate because there's like...
And intermediate is below that as well.
There is. Well, there's 6 million divisions. So I think they just had a young team who... Like, I think there was a run of 2 or 3 games where you win 2 and you're in, but you lose 2 when you're suddenly in a relegation playoff.
Right.
And, I don't know. I think it was Whitehall that beat them as well, so. Oof. Bit of a local rivalry.
Wow.
Good coffee in Whitehall.
Watch.
Amazing coffee in Whitehall.
Championship! Well, already!
No.
Wow.
I would happily buy coffee and Vincent's if you could get some. So anyway, let's move on. St. Pat's won the cup yesterday in a brilliant penalty shootout. I think the cup final kind of disappointed in many respects, and it was nil all after 90 minutes, one all after
it always is, Jer.
Too tense, too stressful.
12 finals at the Aviva Stadium, 9 of them have gone to extra time.
Some of them have been crackers, though, right?
Some have been crackers, but you know, some of them haven't. Maybe it's the fact that suddenly these players who are used to playing in front of 4,000 or 5,000 are in front of, well, you know, the biggest crowd ever in FAI Cup final yesterday, 37,000 at it. The extra time delivered, though, didn't it? I was doing the commentary on the United-Chelsea game, so I was sort of half following it, then watching the highlights last night. Chris Forrester's goal, if that had proven to be the match winner, would have gone down as one of the great FAI Cup final goals. Picks it up inside his own half, weaves his way to the edge of the area, smashes it in, and he's had a real revival this year. Obviously a huge amount of interviews with lots of the players, some really good stuff over the weekend, and you know, he was the boy wonder of Irish football 7-8 years ago, goes to England, comes back, and you're expecting him to come and dominate the league. Doesn't happen. He's spoken about a huge amount of personal issues that he's had to battle through, and felt as though maybe his career was sort of petering out. Stephen O'Donnell comes in, makes a connection with him, gets him fully focused, gets him playing probably the best football that he's played in 7-8 years, and to go to a cup final then yesterday and to score a goal like that, probably deserved to be the match winner. Obviously Bowles get the equaliser, goes to penalties, Forrester misses.
Yeah.
Misses his penalty, but Robbie Benson, who was there alongside Stephen O'Donnell for the glory days at Dundalk, is the man who's the hero. And it does feel again that, like, I know it's too easy to say that the club game is in a good place, but there's a real buzz, particularly in Dublin right now. And around the rest of the country, maybe it's a different issue. We saw, obviously, Waterford, the way it's fallen apart, and Waterford been beaten then by UCD in the playoff on Friday night, means there's going to be no clubs from Munster in the League of Ireland Premier Division next year. It's going to be very, very Dublin-centric with UCD in there as well. But, you know, you have Shamrock Rovers as the champions, getting huge crowds to Tala every week. You know, Bowes and Pats have really managed to ingrain themselves in their communities.
Shelburne of Duffer.
So, as a Dublin thing, it's going to be huge. And Derry have a massive investment coming in, have signed a lot of players already. They look like they could be maybe even the strongest contenders to go up against Shamrock Rovers. Dundalk is always going to be fascinating to see what happens, albeit maybe operating off a smaller budget next season and maybe not quite been able to get to where they were over the last few years. But yeah, brilliant for Pats and brilliant for Stephen O'Donnell as well, who I know already has been linked with maybe a move away, that he hasn't committed his future to the club. But you know, Stephen's been in this studio a lot talking about, you know, his own career, the lessons he learned from going over to Arsenal. Been that, like, Stephen was this wonder kid in the west of Ireland when he was 12, 13, 14 years of age. Would admit himself probably didn't make the most of the opportunity when he went to Arsenal, was just that little bit too young, pretty much a fish out of water. but much like Chris Forrester, met the right manager at the right time, and Stephen Kenny flourished later in his career. And you know, being a League of Ireland manager ain't easy.
No,
like it's
it's week to week. And so the back page of the Daily Mail this morning, an exclusive from Philip Quinn: Steve Staunton could be set for a shock return to management with his hometown club Dundalk. The former Ireland manager, Ireland's first 100-cap international, is understood to have contact with the County Louth side about the post. Finney Perth returned as manager last June for a second spell until the end of the season, but his future is uncertain. So I had incorrectly assumed that it was just going to roll over and that Finney would be back next season, but it doesn't look like that's guaranteed. And there's a few lines here. He was in, so Sportsmail understands Staunton, 52, whose appointment could attract investors, is under consideration for the post. So it looks like he has been in contact with them.
Like, what does attract investors mean? Attract new sponsors or attract somebody to take a chunk of the club? Because obviously the celebration is that it's back in local ownership again. There's also speculation around Stephen O'Donnell. What needs to come out is what Dundalk's ambitions are in terms of, we will, for the next few years, always associate Dundalk with
Dundalk's new owners are eager to re-establish the club as a powerhouse in Irish club football.
Well, then you got to go and
spend the money,
back that up and spend it, and
the Derry money and beat the Rovers money.
When you've consistently over the last couple of years lost your best players to Derry and Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, now I'm old enough to remember that there was a bit of an arms race which produced that great Shelburne team, but made Shelburne collapse on the back of it because they incurred debts. So you want to make sure that if there's any money being spent, that it is spent in a sustainable way and based on budgets that are not based on qualifying for the group stages of the Champions League, you know?
Yeah, which, you know, for Dundalk ain't going to happen anytime in the near future again. So, like, what is their aim? Is it to get back very quickly and be contending with Shamrock Rovers? Like, they're miles, miles behind Shamrock Rovers. And again, they're losing Michael Duffy, Pat McElhaney. Like, they're losing their most talented players again. So, that is, I think that's probably the most difficult job in the League of Ireland next year, because the expectation, certainly outside of Dundalk, is going to be, well, you need to be contending because that's what we've done for the last decade. Whereas the reality is the playing squad and the budget is probably going to be miles off that. So if you're Stephen O'Donnell, I know there's the emotional connection with Dundalk and he's seen how it was done before. Maybe it's attractive, but you've just won the league with Pats.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Steve Staunton being
a cup with Pats.
Oh, Steve Staunton being there would be interesting.
Yeah, suddenly you've got, Jesus, you've got a
Staunton and Duffer.
Staunton and Duffer, that's a very left-wing League of Ireland. A more left-wing League of Ireland than it is even right now. It couldn't be much more left-wing.
We should talk about the crowd trouble at Irishtown, which obviously did the rounds on Twitter yesterday. The Bulls fans were being fingered with the blame, but it was hard to establish exactly what had happened. And it doesn't seem as if there's been too much coming out from the guards in terms of details of exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think they're investigating. Look, I think everyone saw the pictures and it's pretty horrifying, and it seems as if it was a family event for Pat supporters. I've only seen the video from outside, so I'm not sure, you know, was there kids in there as well? And it does seem out of nowhere, a group of what we're told are Bulls fans, but, you know, wearing, I guess, the typical hooligan gear of just being in all black so they can't be properly identified, come in and just out of nowhere attack all the Pat supporters, which is pretty outrageous in a what's generally a, I think everyone's saying, you know, pretty quiet part of Dublin. This sort of thing doesn't happen around these sort of games, around the Aviva Stadium. But look, there is a history there between Pats and Bulls. There's a history between Bulls and Shamrock Rovers. There's an element that, like all hooliganism, there's a lot of young lads who are just looking for a scrap and attach themselves to the club and destroy the club's reputation. And I see a lot of people jumping on saying, you know, the usual, this wouldn't happen in other sports, yada, yada, yada. Like,
Ireland's a pretty violent society. If you go out and look at any late Friday night in any provincial town, any city, there's scraps. Like, and we can tut-tut and we can say that this is specifically localised to League of Ireland football, but it isn't.
No, but it's important as well that the FAI and the clubs get out in front of this, because
immediately,
say, there's 37,000 people there yesterday. Yeah. Season tickets are on sale for next year for all the clubs, and you want to get that floating voter, and you don't want people watching the news.
No, is it safe for the families to go to games? You don't know.
And who's this? What? Well, football? Hooliganism? This is, you know, actually, you know, I go to Tal every week. I've never seen any, even the slightest issue at all, aside from everybody's kids running on when they win the title and destroying the pitch and things like that. But like, this is not a representation of day-to-day League of Ireland life. So I think they need to get out in front of it, make that clear, find the people who were involved.
Yeah, and because, like, how are they organising? Maybe they're organising on Telegram. I don't know. Are they even that organised? Were there tweets? Were there Snapchats? Like, surely there is somebody whose job it is to...
Well, there must have been. There had to be, because it clearly looked organised, premeditated, that they knew that this event was happening in the pub. They knew it was going to be full of Pats fans, and they knew they were probably... when would you be ever ready to be randomly attacked on the street?
Brian Dillon says Everton lost yesterday. The narrative straight away from Nathan is that Rafa is under real pressure. I don't support Everton, but it's straight to the blame the manager for everything narrative. Brian Dillon getting in touch again.
That's not the blame. The manager always gets the blame.
Brian Dillon saying, sorry, I can't stop saying narrative. I blame the media. You blame the media. Nathan blames the manager. That's how it goes.
Well, what is the alternative that we say Everton need to sell 8 of their players to teach them a lesson for getting 5-6 managers sacked? Like, that's just not how football works.
Probably,
the option is always change the manager.
Sai Kaushik says, Ralf Rangnick did not pick the team. Carrick confirmed it, and therefore we must believe it. Everybody always tells the 100% truth in post-match press conferences. That is fact. We know that to be fact. We know no one has ever, ever said something that was, you know, a little bit off.
Rangnick didn't pick the team. And also, Rangnick couldn't be that much of a genius if... Then, by one phone call with Michael Carrick, you can change their entire style of play.
Well, because they've done this before. They did it all last year. When Roy's saying in the aftermath, where was the plan last year? Well, this was the plan last year. We would defend and try and play in the counter-attack. And they didn't.
Yesterday was different because I don't think they tried to play in the counter-attack. Maybe they just weren't good enough to.
Well, they were trying to. I mean, they were trying to, but they were incapable of it. That's different.
Mm.
Like, if United fans weren't happy... Ole starting McFred in central mid. They're definitely not going to be happy if rumoured to be believed that Ralph picked the team yesterday and added Matic to the party, says John Claffey.
I thought Matic was really good yesterday, actually.
Yeah, but he ain't the future.
No, he's not. But he, again, turns out the three of them just about do the job that maybe Declan Rice could do.
Is Fred an attacking midfielder and they've just been using him badly the whole time?
Well,
isn't that
I don't know if Fred's an attacking midfielder, but there is maybe a potential in Fred that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer couldn't fully realise, or that Jose Mourinho couldn't fully realise, and that, you know, this is what good managers do. They bring them to another level.
He can press, we've seen. He's good at that.
Mm.
Maybe he's your forward. He's the I am deciding where the press is, and everybody.
He's your Gini Wijnaldum.
Maybe. Like, you know, there's a. It's not. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I'm leaving it at that. I'm also leaving open the room that this is a complete failure. Like, there's. Every range of outcome is possible at this point with the Rangnick era.
Where do they go next?
I don't know, you know. United out of the red, give it to me, says Patrick Mackin. We gave it to you. We put Ronaldo in the red because we think that the clock is ticking. Henry Winter style, the clock is ticking on Cristiano Ronaldo's time at Manchester United, whether or not it's in the January transfer window or whether or not it's next summer. You think he's going to be here next Christmas 2022, Cristiano Ronaldo, after the World Cup?
Yes.
Coming back to Manchester United?
Coming back, I think he'll still be there by the World Cup, definitely.
OTBAM with Gillette, proud sponsors of November. Gentlemen, let's mow. If you want to get involved, if you want your chance to win a Gillette starter pack, all you got to do is tell us who you think should be in the green, which is good, who you think should be in the amber, which is meh, and who you think should be in the red, which is full stop. We're going to take a quick break, back after these.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.